as you said. Welcome to another episode of Big Fish Radio. This is your captain speaking. It's Captain Barry. I've got Robert, co-host. What's up, Robert? How are you doing?
Hi, Barry.
Hey, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. I'm doing well. And we've got Miss Alexandra B. Fishin' on the mic. She's doing all the controls, believe it or not. She is, not believe it or not, but...
Women can do stuff, too. That's even fish and run the boards.
Jeez.
Here, we're starting off good.
Yeah.
Doo-doo-doo, mangrove snapper, go.
Let's do it. So today we are going to be talking about mangrove snapper and how to catch the biggest one that you can possibly find. So, to start, Robert, would you like to educate us on the biggest mangrove snapper? Can it be done from land? What's the best way to do it?
Realistically, no.
No?
Cannot be done from land.
So is this motivation
for... Not in Southwest Florida that I am aware of. You know, you can always try for the biggest one, obviously, but if you really want a mangrove snapper that's going to go more than a pound and a half, mm-hmm. you're going to have to go out in a boat and go offshore for them out into the Gulf of Mexico.
Gotcha.
You know, unfortunately, Charlotte Harbor is a nursery, you know, to speak as far as most of our species of fish, so a lot of the little guys grow up here, and since snapper are primarily an offshore species, their babies grow up here, they reach a certain size, and then they head offshore to spend their adult lives and reproduce out there, and their babies come in here and grow up.
Wow. So, do you know why they've gotten their, like, name as mangrove snapper, if the biggest ones are found offshore?
Oh, that's a good question.
Alex,
do you know this? Do you know the answer to this one?
Because they are found around mangroves?
Maybe. It also could be it's their nickname, because what's their real name?
Gray Snapper.
Wow.
That's how the FWC recognizes them, so when you're looking them up in the regulations, as with most fish species, especially saltwater fish, you want to talk about confusing with the laws and regulations, try having a fish that has...
Multiple names,
depending on your geographic location to an area. You know, and most people in Southwest Florida and even South Florida call them mangrove snapper. Up in the Panhandle, they refer to them a lot of times as gray snapper.
Gray. Okay.
There's a guy on the pier, he calls them mango snappers, and for a long time I just thought he had misunderstood what he was fishing for every single day. But I guess people do actually call them mango snappers as well.
Yeah, mangoes.
I've heard them called mangs, like just mangs.
Yeah, mangs and mangoes are super common names, especially when you go out onto the party boats where there's 20 yeah. to 50 people fishing on a boat, and the mates on the boat will call them mangs or mangoes. Hmm. You know, and I think it's just slang. It's lack of better terms. It's just laziness and not wanting to follow all the way through with the grove.
God. It's so hard to pronounce grove anyways. So,
what is their distribution?
Good question. I have no idea, to be honest with you.
They're what?
They're all over in Florida.
They're where are they found?
Distribution?
Yeah. I mean, all of the Gulf of Mexico, from Texas all the way through Florida, I'm positive of, but I'm not sure how far north they go or how far south they go, to be honest.
Okay. Yeah, I know they're on the oil rigs in Louisiana. That's where they catch some monsters.
Yeah, that's where their world record is from.
Right, yes.
Which was just recently rebroke in the last year, I believe.
In the same place, in Louisiana?
Yeah, I think so.
Wow.
What is the record?
It's pretty peppy.
Yeah, I just did like...
I want to say it's like 17 pounds or something like that. It might even be bigger than that.
Yeah, it's right around... The previous world record was 17 pounds.
Okay. But you know, in the harbor they're small.
Sorry, Robin, didn't mean to interrupt you. It's 18.63 pounds, confirmed through the IGFA.
Yeah,
that's a huge mangrove. That's like grouper sized.
Yes,
imagine just pulling a snapper up 18 pounds of mangrove snapper.
Well, and that's probably realistically a 30-inch mangrove snapper.
Yeah,
I mean
oh
that's
my goodness
a very large fish.
Wow.
You know, so in the harbor, you're never going to get in anything like that. I mean, my personal biggest ever in Charlotte Harbor was 17 inches, and that was...
You caught a 17-incher in the harbor?
Yeah.
From a boat on
shore? In the ICW, if you want to get real specific.
Okay.
You know, it was very near one of the passes, and it was huge. And I've seen a handful over the years in that 2 and 2.5 pound range, but it's so... By sheer chance.
Yeah. Maybe they're migrating through or something or getting ready to move offshore.
But you get your biggest of your fish, once they get to be about 12 inches or so is when they start to become more pretty much sexually mature. And that's when they start to migrate offshore and grow up most of their lives on the near shore reefs.
Gotcha.
You know, and so, you know, this is one of those few species where you really have to go on a boat to stand a good chance of catching the largest of them. You know, if you want a fish, it's going to be in that 3 to 6 pound range, because any more, you know, 6 pounders are still hurt, you know, heard and caught with some regularity, but you very seldom hear of them caught more than that anymore.
Yeah, I get it.
But targeting them is... There's a lot of different ways to target them. Just picking out that biggest one is always the trickiest of them all. Mm-hmm.
So let's...
Real quick, do you think the flavor of a mangrove snapper changes much as it gets larger? They're a tasty fish.
Yeah. Very tasty. I mean, I honestly don't know. I don't have enough experience with eating really large mangrove snapper to tell you if there's a difference. So I'm not a connoisseur of that. I'm more of a canisseur.
The largest, the canisseur. Campbell soup.
Yeah, pretty much.
Snapper edition. The largest one I've had, Alex, was 23 inches. I caught offshore, and I mean, it tasted fantastic.
Really?
I didn't notice. I mean, there's just more meat. So it's like you get to enjoy more snapper than like a, you know, 12-inch, not a 12-inch fillet, but a 12-inch snapper that you would catch in the harbor. So to me, I didn't notice any difference at all.
Cool.
And me personally, I prefer them with the skin on.
Really?
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah, mangrove snapper with the skin on is much more flavorful.
Leaving
that little layer of fat that's on there in between the skin and the fillet, and while it's cooking up, is just pretty darn amazing.
Gotcha.
Changes the whole flavor of the fish, personally, for the better.
But next time I fillet some up, I will definitely take that into account.
Just scale them and leave the skin on, you know, and it's pretty impressive. Yeah. At least worth trying a couple different, you know, couple fillets. But when targeting them offshore, you're going to go out and you're going to find, you know, the cool part about mangrove snapper is that you'll find them on natural bottom and man-made structure. So, but the key to it is going to be some sort of structure to really find those fish.
I'm glad you brought that up, because they're not going to be like a pelagic fish where they're just roaming on just sand. They're going to be around structure. So that's like number one, what you're going to be wanting to look for, whether you're inshore or offshore, but specifically offshore for these big ones.
Yeah. Yeah, and going out there trying to find that hard bottom or artificial reef, you know, you just got to go out and hunt for those spots, and they do move around quite a bit, so you'll find that this particular ledge or reef has them for this many months, and then for this many months they're in a completely different spot. And sometimes that has to do with their spawning. Sometimes it has to do with water temperature. You know, there's a lot of different reasons why those fish will move, but they're not always going to be on that same exact spot every time.
Okay.
Do they hang out with a particular fish?
Each other. They are a semi.
So they don't. You're not going to find them if you come across some red grouper. They're not typically hanging out with another fish.
Yeah, well, since they are more structure-oriented around reefs, you're going to catch a lot of other reef species in addition to them. So grouper, other species of snapper, you know, there's a lot of little reef fish that will be in that same vicinity with them that are always a bycatch.
Yeah.
Okay.
So when Robert was saying they're found together, he means, like, also you're not going to have just one mangrove snapper solo. They're usually in schools together. And then, because they like structure, you'll find other fish that are going to be with that structure as well. Like, whether it be gags love structure. The biggest one I've caught was mixed in with amberjacks.
Okay.
He was coming up to the boat eating chum, and I was at the right place at the right time, and he grabbed my pinfish. So,
the gag grouper.
What's that?
The gag grouper or your mangrove snapper?
The mangrove.
Yeah. And see, and that's honestly, truly the best way to target mangrove snappers in general, but some of your largest mangrove snappers, that's going to be your best way to target them, is chumming extremely heavy and raising those fish up from the bottom.
Okay.
You know, and getting them suspended in the water column. I mean, in some areas, you can work fairly hard at the chumming in 90 feet of water and get those mangrove snapper to come all the way up to the surface. Yeah. And then you can kind of pick and choose. And a lot of times, the ones that are the closest to your chum are usually the smaller ones. Your larger ones are usually sitting underneath or a little bit further back down current, collecting some of the scraps and also picking up some of the other bait fish that are being attracted to your chum.
So question for you, Robert, is when is, like, the most, like, what time of year do they spawn, will you find, like, the biggest mangrove snapper? What time of year is it going to be? Is it going to be in the spring?
Usually in Florida and most of the Gulf of Mexico, it's usually July and August is when they get together and they're huge spawning aggregates.
Okay.
And it's usually around the full moon.
Right. So I was going to say we could actually probably split this into a two-parter where we could do one targeting them during the day. And then I know another tactic is to target big snapper at night.
Well, that's usually where you'll pick up your biggest ones anyway, is going to be at night. So
right. Yeah.
I don't know about doing a two-parter or not, because the reason why for that is because the big ones didn't get dumb by getting big.
Yeah.
So getting big by being dumb. There we go. You know, so by going with them, targeting them at night, they let their guard down a little bit more. They don't see the hook as easily. They don't see your leader, your terminal gear. Just a lot of your largest fish that you will ever catch of any species, most of them are caught in the twilight hours or at night. And since mangrove snapper are absolutely active both day and at night, a much better chance of catching that largest one at night.
Right, and as you see, when we start talking about the tackle, like, you really have to scale down for them in terms of your length of your leader and the leader size to catch these big mangrove snapper. If you don't do that, typically you're going to just catch a lot of, like, the 15, 14 inchers, and the big 20 plus inchers will they'll bypass it. They'll see what something's wrong with the piece of bait and not pick it up. So.
So what would you be using for your rod, reel, leader, the whole nine yards?
All right, so for offshore, well, first off, do you want to say a depth, Robert? Let's say we're in, like, June and July here in Southwest Florida. Is there, like, usually in the summer months, you have to go farther offshore to catch decent fish? I haven't personally done it during the summer months.
I'm going to say 60 to 80 feet of water, so
okay.
Let's take 80 feet of water, which is roughly 30 miles offshore.
Okay, so about 30 miles offshore. My tackle that I would be using if I was specifically going for a big snapper, and I would honestly start off with 20-pound fluorocarbon, and I would put, like, a 20-foot section.
Wow.
I would do an FG9 and put a long, long section of line, of leader, and I'd probably be using, like, 20-pound braid. And as small of a hook as I can get down to. So maybe, honestly, like a 1 or maximum 2-0 circle hook. And that would be it. So I can hide the hook in the bait, and I have a super light leader, so it stands the chance of them biting it. And if I start getting broken off a lot, maybe I'll jump up to 30. But that's where I would start off, is 20.
Okay.
How about you, Robert?
I'm going to agree with you with some of that, but, I mean, honestly, I'm going to, because I'm targeting the largest of the mangrove snapper, I'm going to probably be using still, like, 20-pound test line, maybe realistically 30-pound braid line.
Okay.
On a little heavier than normal jigging rod.
Yes.
You know, something I can multitask with, but it's going to be a jigging rod spinning reel that's going to be in that 5,000, 6,000 size. And I'm going to start with a 30-pound fluorocarbon leader, but I'm going to start with, you know, probably around 20 feet of leader line.
Wow.
Right.
But I'm going to go with a little bit larger of a hook, because I'm actually going to use a little bit larger of a bait.
Okay.
I'm going to try using, like, roughly, I'm going to say, like, a 2-0 to a 3-0 inline circle hook, like a VMC or an owner, because those guys are really similar in size to their J hooks.
Mm-hmm.
but I'm going to try to use a pinfish, a small squirrel fish, something in about the 3-inch or so size range.
Okay.
You know, those bigger mangrove snapper are fairly aggressive, and a pinfish is almost like, I don't know how to describe it, but it's almost like a drug to them. Them giving up a live small pinfish is
hard
for them to pass up.
And I'm sure a lot of people are like, man, you guys are fishing in such deep water, and you're freelining, right? We don't have any weights on our
freeline in it.
Exactly. That's another thing we want to point out. And the reason for that is, we kind of touched on this earlier, is we want to put a lot of like chum bags and actually drop pieces of cut sardines or greenbacks, whatever it is. It might take 20 minutes to half an hour, but you want to get a steady flow of chum going in the water so these snapper come off the wreck, which they will do, and they'll sit 10 feet under the water behind the boat just picking off little scraps that you're throwing in the water. So right. That's why, to me, I like starting off with something light, because I can get the bite, and it has to go quite a ways to go back down to the bottom before they can break you off. So that's why we're using such light leaders. Right, Robert?
Right, exactly. You know, and the only reason why I'm going just a little bit heavier is because I know that most of the time for those guys, I'm going to be fishing at night. I know I want to be able to put the brakes on them a little bit faster because of some of the other predators that are around, like your Goliath grouper, your amberjack, your barracudas. All those will still come up and eat your snapper.
That's
so
true. In a perfect world, you would just be fighting the snapper. It's not the top of the food chain, unfortunately.
You know, and then the other reason why I like that little bit heavier tackle is because there's always that chance gag grouper will come out of 80 feet of water up to the surface too, just like those snapper, and feed in that water column. So if I happen to hook into a little bit bigger fish that was unintended but great bycatch,
great point.
I still have a good realistic possibility of landing that fish also.
Good point. Good. That's a great point. And I was going to say, the largest snapper I caught offshore was also on a pinfish. Like what you're saying, it was like a 3-inch pinfish, and I was dropping it down into like I was trying to hook an AJ. I was using 30 or 40 pound leader. It was four AJs. Mm-hmm. And this snapper, like you said, the pinfish went straight down and started darting around, and the snapper just came out of nowhere and crushed it.
Yeah.
Before an AJ did, which is saying something. So there is something to what you're saying about how a frisky live with little pinfish, those big snappers just can't pass up.
Yeah. And them being that large, they are not necessarily part of the food chain. They're actually kind of right in that middle size, so they don't get harassed as much, or they're not afraid of being bullied as much by, say, an amberjack that's swimming around.
Exactly.
Or another grouper that might be swimming around, because at that point, you're dealing with, you know, a 20 to 30-inch fish, which is going to be the same size as most of your gag grouper and your amberjack that are out there, too.
Yeah, that's why I was, you know, freely swimming with all those amberjacks and didn't mind feeding with them.
Right.
I felt safe enough, so it knew its place in the food chain.
Right, and one of my favorite chums, you know, I usually go out there with several different types of chum, you know, especially when you're targeting snappers, but especially if you want to get them to come up to the surface. I've got the traditional frozen block of chum that you hang off the side of the boat that just kind of floats on the surface and trickles down a little bit. But I'm also taking glass minnows, a 5-pound block of those, and
okay.
I'm taking pieces of those and just dicing them up to mix in with my chum slick.
Are you putting those in the chum bag as well, or are you like letting those
I'm just dicing freebies? Those up and just kind of throwing them out as freebies. But
okay.
I'm using small pieces because the object of chumming is to attract the fish but not fill them up.
Right.
You know, you want them to just have little tiny pieces. It's like giving them one M&M. You don't want to give them five M&Ms.
Yeah.
You know, just that one. And really get them interested and tease them in. So that's going to be the one type of chum. Then the other chum that I'm going to do is I'm actually going to bring a tropical fish food with play sand mixture.
Okay.
The tropical fish food is a dry mixture. It's like a powder. And what you do is you get it wet and turn it into almost like a dough ball.
What, just the fish food or that mixed with the sand?
That mixed with the sand.
Okay.
I'm going to do at least a 50-50 mix. 50% play sand, 50% tropical fish food. I'm going to add some menhaden oil to that.
Okay.
And I'm going to mix that up into, I'm going to probably, because usually when we're going at night, we're staying out all night and into the morning, or we're going out in the late afternoon and all through the night and fish the early morning. So there's usually a 12-hour fishing excursion. So you're going through a lot of bait. So I'm usually taking a 5-gallon bucket of that chum with me. And what the Keys call it sandballing.
Yes.
And what you'll do is you take that sand, fish food, and you can even add rolled oats to it if you want, or chicken scratch, you know, Leanna chicken meal, something like that, to add to the consistency. But I also add the manhaden oil to it and start mixing it all together. And what happens with that manhaden oil is it absorbs into the sand and the fish food, all that. And once you've gotten to that consistency where it's basically almost like cookie dough, you take it and make a ball out of it, and I'll just drop it off the side of the boat. And it's going to sink down to the bottom and into the water column. And as it's going down, it's breaking apart the entire time. Mm-hmm. And even if it stays together, once it hits the bottom, it actually almost explodes and sends out this major chum slick. Well, the sand that's mixed in there is serving two purposes. One, it's absorbed that oil into itself, so it becomes buoyant at different points depending on the grain of that sand. So you've got a complete column of sand floating at different levels throughout that whole water column, releasing scent because of the oil that's in it. But that sand is also clouding up the water, making those fish much less leader shy, because now they can't see as well. Because mangrove snapper have unbelievably great vision. And having that for just that added little trick and quirk to, even though I'm fishing at night or during the day, that sandballing works out so phenomenally well with messing with those fish to get them to let their guard down a little bit more, to give me a little bit more room for error.
Wow.
Sorry, it was
very descriptive, Robert.
No, yeah, you describing that and being able to visualize and see exactly how that chum ball is breaking apart and how it's functioning to bring the fish, that was awesome. Thank you, Robert.
You got a smile today.
Right?
It's just smiling.
Oh, it's a real smile, too.
I like it.
I was going to say one last thing to add for these night fishing for the mangrove snapper is another way to draw them up to the boat, especially at night. I've seen people do this. You have a fluorescent, basically fish light, that they hook up to a car battery, and that can also drive the fish off the reef to your boat.
Oh, having a light, absolutely. And a lot of boats even come with submersible lights that are built into the bottom of the hull of the boat.
Yeah.
That are just like your underwater dock lights, and that glow brings in all different stuff.
Exactly. So that was just another last little thing. So.
No, that works out really well. The other thing you can do is that not only do you have that light that works extremely well, but, my brain just went, zzz, I don't know where it went. But that sandballing technique also, if you want to drop that down where you actually stick your bait inside that sandball and wrap your leader around it a little bit and then set it down and feed it all the way to the bottom, it'll break apart and you have this nice little morsel of meat sitting inside that ball down there, and those fish will come over and pounce on it pretty well. So it's another little trick in addition to that chum. Wow. So it's multitasking, but the biggest thing is always take that with you.
Well, that about wraps it up. And I was going to say, I hope you guys learned something from this. And
I sure did.
And can implement this in catching the biggest mangrove snapper of your lives. This is Captain Barry. You can find me on tarponworld.com. I would love to connect with you guys, send me questions. You can find Alex on Alexandra B. Fishin' on Facebook. And you can find Robert here at Fish and Franks at the shop.
And me too. I work at Fish and Franks.
Yep.
Come visit us.
And we'll see you on the next episode. Bye. She's putting up her hair. She's touring the facility.